Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Tom Withers is in today. Jeff is off. Jeff will be back with you tomorrow on the Browns Radio Network at halftime and post. I'll be with you pregame. Looking forward to it. I'll be on, Ken Kerman's on before me for the first 2 hours, and then I'll do the last 2 hours getting you set with Tyvus Powell. So we're looking forward to getting you ready for the game tomorrow on the Browns Radio Network. So, but Tom's in today. We've been talking about what's going on with the Browns. He was in Berea for most of the week, right?
Yeah, a couple days.
So,
yeah.
How's retirement?
It's not.
You're too young to be retired, by the way.
I know. It's, you know what? It was great to be back out there, not only to see some of the media colleagues and a few of the Browns players that I especially like. It was good for my brain. It was good to be like, you know, back in kind of the work groove a little bit.
Right.
And so that was important. And, you know, I was there for a couple of interesting days. You know, we can get back into it in a little bit here. The Myles Garrett the discussion, denial.
Yeah. I kind of want to get it because I think it's interesting when we can have these kind of conversations. And
yeah.
Jeff and I have them every once in a while, but we don't, I mean, there's a difference between being a beat reporter and sitting here in the ivory tower. And I've said this for 13 years, right?
Yeah.
And so when you're there, and I'm sure, like, isn't that the way to look at it? If you're sitting in Berea, you're like, well, you know, you're doing all this work and you're into the minutia of everything that's going on. And then you've got about 15 voices in town that sit in the ivory tower and they judge everything. And really, and it's just weird because, I mean, for years, both Jeff and I, we were in the pit.
Right.
And so now all of a sudden you sit up here and you're like, you have opinions based on this and that. But yet, I'll be honest with you, when you're sitting in this chair, you know things, but you just don't know them the same way that Tom does and the way things are going on inside.
Thank you. And I, you know, I feel the same way about, you know, many of the people that cover the Browns, and which is why the frustrating thing at times, Andy, over the last few years was that you'd be at practice every day, you watch what you watch, you formed your opinions, and then suddenly some national writer, you know, makes a phone call or gets a phone call from somebody in Berea, however that works, right?
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you feel like, God, do I even cover this team? Like, what are they seeing that I'm not, et cetera? So it's tough, and especially now in this social media world, in this aggregation world where everybody takes a little snippet from a practice and turns one play into something that it's not, right? I had this conversation with a couple of the writers this week out there. You know, there's been a lot of analysis about this quarterback group, and
right.
That's what we do, right? And I'm afraid sometimes, though, that reporters, and I'll include myself in this mix, you don't know exactly what you're looking at because it's almost like those PFF grades you get on a Monday after a Sunday Browns game, right?
Where right.
Somebody grades out it as a 98, and you have to skew that because you don't know what play was called. You don't know if somebody ran the wrong pass route. You don't know if somebody missed a block, right? There's only so much you can know by just watching the play. And I feel like that's happened a little bit with this quarterback competition where, you know, you're not exactly sure, is that where the ball was supposed to be going? Did Sanders miss a guy downfield? Was Gabriel supposed to check down on that play? You know, is he feeling the pass rush? Obviously, they're not sacking these guys. So it's just been different. But yeah, it's great to be out there and to really kind of not only see it and feel it and really get a sense about, you know, what this 2025 Browns team is really all about.
All right, so what? Let's dive into that with the quarterback situation because we sit here and we talk about it all the time. Like, I look at this, and I've said this yesterday too, that Flacco's a guy that's had the experience. He knows what he's – and by the, if I'm Kevin Stefanski, there's like one guy I really, really trust, and it's Joe because he's yeah. seen it work with him before. Whether it didn't work in a playoff game or not is irrelevant right now. Joe just has that experience. Now, does he still have the physical attributes? I think his arm is. And I don't know. I mean, younger guys just have a little bit more pep and energy, but so what? I'd rather have a guy – I mean, how long did we watch Ben Roethlisberger or Peyton Manning stay out there long past their prime to run out of the pocket, right? So, but then I look at Kenny Pickett, and I'm like, all right, we didn't get to really see this guy. They took him in first. Maybe that was the guy they were thinking about. And then you have two rookies, and I was blue in the face yesterday screaming about, why are we in such a hurry to get rookies out on the field?
Yeah.
And can't we just follow the old school pattern of, let's give these guys the opportunity to develop and then put them out, because there's just no way you can know and be in the same rhythm with the coaching staff and be able to be in the rhythm with the same 10 guys that are in front of you and just doing that after like 3 months.
Right.
It's just, this is pros. This isn't, we're switching. Like, to me, in college, it makes more sense because your lineup, your offensive line, your wide receivers, your running backs, they change every year.
Correct.
When you're in the NFL, these guys have been here for 2 or 3 years for sure.
Yeah.
So I don't. What do we really?
Let's stop.
What are we really hearing?
Let's start and stop with number 15 for a second. I mean, Joe. Okay. Joe is not your average 40-year-old, right? He's kept himself in remarkable shape. I mean, the fact that he could even be out there at 40 is just an absolute marvel, right? And right. It's a very select list. I think he'll be the 18th quarterback to ever start a game in the NFL over 40.
Yeah, we were going through this yesterday. I think it's somewhere between 18 and 20 or 15.
Okay. We tried to get it pinned down the other day just so we were factually correct.
And yeah, we were
18
too.
18 was the number I came up with through the Hall of Fame.
Yes, and there's a Hall of Fame number.
Correct. There is. Yeah. And oh, by the way, a bunch of Hall of Famers on there. Right.
Yeah, but you
Favre and I know you got.
I got the list. Yes, I did it yesterday. So,
and obviously, there's a reason why those guys were still playing. Johnny Unitas is on that list.
Yes,
I think he was 1-3.
Sonny Jurgensen's on that list.
Sonny Jurgensen.
Zeke Bradkowski was 0-1.
But as I've been told by a couple of people in the Browns building, is that Joe really views this as a chance to, you know, establish his legacy as, you know, one of the best quarterbacks over the last 20 years. I mean, he's put up some pretty remarkable numbers, right?
Yeah.
He's got 105 career wins, I think. I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer necessarily, but he's certainly gone from being a villain in this town to a folk hero, right?
Yeah.
And I think there...
I don't even remember him playing for the Ravens. How good is that?
Did he play for the Ravens? I can't remember. Yeah.
I think so.
and just tortured the Browns, right? I mean, his record was just incredible. Well, they all have. But that said... you know, he's a guy that they knew they could trust, right? And
right.
I think, unfortunately, a year ago, I would have liked to see the same thing happen, right? For them to build off that momentum of 2023. But I get why they were doing it, because they still felt like they could get something out of Deshaun, blah, blah, blah.
I still feel like they think they can get something out of Deshaun. I'm the only guy in town.
But. We'll talk about that in the next hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows where that... Again, the line moves quickly in this town. You never know what could come your way. So, I when you watch Joe in practice... He just stands. He's the varsity quarterback out there, right?
Right.
He's the guy that you know that he can see the entire field. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he plays. Now, granted, you know, he's also the guy, he throws such a beautiful ball, and that's something to behold. And, you know, it's kind of been his signature. There's always that chance, though, that he's either going to throw a touchdown pass or he's going to throw into triple coverage and it's going to get picked, right?
Right.
We saw it in the playoff game. So, but I feel like... They have confidence in him. They know what they've got. I think, as I brought it up earlier, I think it means a lot to be able to stand in, for Stefanski to stand in front of that room and tell Joel Bitonio, who came back this year, that Joe Flacco is your guy. And by God, we're going to try to win as many games as we can. Whether they do or not, that's another thing, Andy. It's a tough schedule. And I have to tell you, that those first six games are about as brutal as it gets. So we'll see. But, you know, I think there's a lot of faith in Joe. And again, I don't think he's necessarily... viewing himself as a mentor at this point, but I think there's an osmosis that goes on just by having Dylan and Shador watch this guy and Kenny Pickett to a degree, watch him on a daily basis and watch the way he goes about his job, a pro's pro.
So, I was told by some folks that were in the locker room at the time that Joe, since 99, no one has commanded or had the respect of his fellow teammates the way Joe did when they had that run when they were going to the playoffs, that it was the first time for a lot of people that had been around for a while that they felt like that locker room was a locker room that was not destined for the playoffs, but like under control, no drama, quarterback who can go out there and help them win, despite the number of interceptions he was throwing, because, I mean, he was still throwing interceptions, but they were winning because you mixed it with a defense that was able to keep the other team under the amount of points that Joe had command of that. It's not that Joe had command of the locker room. The locker room wanted to look up to Joe, and he had the command to do it.
Well, and it also came at a time, Andy, where we were all searching for something, right? It was in the midst of the whole Deshaun Watson debacle, right?
I mean,
off of the suspension, the injury, et cetera. It was just, right? I mean, things were just really going sideways, and he brought that stability. And I was telling somebody the story the other day. The first time we as a media group talked to Joe as a whole in the locker room, you know, he got done and then he walked over to his locker and then he came back over and like introduced himself to several of us. I wanted to hug him. It was like, you know, finally we have an adult in the room here.
Right.
Like somebody that really understands not only, you know, his place in this locker room and with this team, but to a bigger degree, who he is with the media and the community at large. Right. So, everything's been refreshing about him. I like the way he handles himself. Obviously, he's done it all and seen it all. Listen, could he go out there and lead them to four wins in the first six games? Yeah. Could he go out there and go 2-4 and suddenly, you know, with the first incompletion, there's chance for Shadur? That could potentially happen as well. So it's going to be fascinating to watch, as always.
I'm going to ask this quick because we got to go to break here in a second. But just if the plan was correct, who's the number two quarterback?
Right now?
Yeah.
Kenny Pickett.
If he's not healthy, then what?
Whoever plays better. You know what? I'll say this. Dylan Gabriel is ahead of Shadur on a lot of levels.
Explain to people why. In fact,
we'll get back to it.
No, go ahead. Explain to people why.
Well, there's a lot of reasons. Number one, he played 63 games in college. He has a better grasp of the offense. He understands what defenses are doing at a higher level than Shadur does right now. That doesn't mean that Shadur can't catch up. That doesn't mean Shadur has some intangibles that Dylan will never have and has shown some composure. And I think that the thing that is getting lost in the shuffle here with a lot of Browns fans is that both of these rookies took huge advantage of the opportunity that they were given. I mean, Shadur went out there. Listen, he may have played in the fourth quarter. If everything had gone the way the Browns had hoped, he may have barely gotten on the field in that opener. Instead, he started it, right? And he played well. Threw a couple touchdowns, forced a couple balls that I think people forget about. I mean, it gets lost in the 14 of 23 shuffle or what have you. And then Gabriel, with all kinds of pressure on him after Shadur had played as well as he did, went out and played exceptionally well last week. Sure. Was there a pick six that, you know, a ball probably that shouldn't have been thrown? No doubt. Fumble that may or may not have been his fault, but a turnover nonetheless. Still, I thought he operated the offense at a high level. He's just got a comfort right now that Shadur doesn't have, I think, in running the offense. I think that's the baseline for it at this point, Andy. That's not to say, though, that there can't be, you know, one or the other jumping the other going forward here.
Tom Withers is in for Jeff today. We're going to come back. I need you to hear what Eric Dickerson said because it's a lot, and in particular it had to do with Shadur and what happened during the draft. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. Baskin and Phelps, Tom Withers is in today, 92.3 The Fan.